Get started. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. That's still really lame. Good morning, everybody. There we go. That's much better. Welcome to Malware Hunting with Assist Internals Tools. My name is Mark Krasinovich. I'm actually in the Azure group as CTO of Azure as of about a month ago. But I'm here because I've got a passion for malware and getting rid of it. And I'd like to share that passion with you this morning. Now, just let me get an idea of why you guys are here. How many people in here are, as your professional job, responsible for keeping your networks clean of malware? Quite a few of you. Actually, just there's lots of people without raised hands. How many of you are in your unprofessional job are responsible for keeping your network, corporate networks clean of malware? And of course, your home systems and your friends' systems and your mom's systems. Yeah. How many of you have been infected by malware yourself? Quite a few of you. Anybody in the last 6 months been infected with malware? Anybody in the last week? It's hard to see hands. Anybody infected with malware here today? Now, there's one hand back there. Sir, I'd be glad to clean the malware off your system if you're willing to let us look at your browser history. I never get any takers. Just never get any takers for that one. So the reason we're here is that, as we see, anti-malware just is not cutting it when it comes to keeping malware off our systems. This is a study that was done last year, researchers at Google that came up with heuristics for identifying malware as they scan the web for executables that they can just find through scavenging around websites. And what they found is that when they detected their heuristics and went and looked at the malware and classified the binaries as malware, that less than 40% of those samples that they discovered were identified as malware by the top four antivirus engines on the market. So this is what is known as zero-day malware. It's malware that the antivirus engines aren't aware of. And this kind of malware is all over the place simply because the malware writers are writing malware constantly and submitting variants of their malware. And they've got obfuscation techniques and they've got polymorphism techniques. And they've also got the advantage of small scale in many cases, where they don't show up on the radar of the anti-malware companies because they're only infecting a very small population. And so they never get caught by the anti-malware engines and then analyzed. And even more specifically, there are cases where companies are getting targeted attacks, which are just focused on very narrowly on them with customized malware that, of course, will bypass anti-malware engines. It's gotten so bad that anti-malware companies that are built their businesses on antivirus have admitted defeat. This is from earlier this year. Symantec, head of Symantec, says anti-malware is dead. We're actually moving on. It's just not working. And so we're going to focus on trying to get malware off of systems once it's gotten on the systems. And so that's why we're here today, because malware might end up on your systems. We've seen that it has. So how do you figure out what it's doing and how do you get it off your systems? And for that, we're going to use a bunch of tools that I actually think are pretty cool, the SysInternals tools. How many people think the SysInternals tools are cool, like I do? If you haven't been to the SysInternals site, anybody not been to this site? Raise your hand so I can make fun of you. No. So this is the site. It's a freeware site. I still continue to work on it, even with my other jobs. This is my hobby. It's just fun to hack around and write tools that people find use for. And it's a very rewarding kind of experience. So I continue to evolve the tools, and I'll show you some new ones and some new features today. So the purpose of this talk, though, isn't to make you a full-blown antivirus researcher, the ability to go in and identify exactly what malware is doing on your system. It is to give you the tools and techniques so that you can get a basic idea of what malware might be up to and so that you can clean it off your system, most malware off your system. Not all malware. There will be examples of malware that are out there that do require an extra level of sophistication to go after, analyze, and clean. But just taking some of these techniques just to understand, if you come across a piece of malware, what is it? Is it copying files? Is it locked my system up? and then maybe get signatures for it yourself. If it's infected your corporate network and you've identified its signature, where it's installing itself, what files it's using, then you might be able to write scripts to go and check it, clean it off other systems, or look for it on other systems of your network to find examples of infection there. Finally, you might be able to use this technique when you're identifying the infection to clean the malware off the system. And this is a point of some debate in the security community. If you've got malware on your system, should you pave it, the system, and restart, or should you take a shot at cleaning it? How many people say just pave and move on? How many people say clean it? And how many people say it depends? And actually, I think that's really the answer, is it depends. If it's your mom's system and it's going to cause her lots of downtime to repave their system, and she's going to lose all her favorite shortcuts and friends' links and everything like that, then you probably want to clean the system instead of repave it. If it's the domain controller at a large organization that's been infected, and there's been examples of that, including here in the EU, large multinational government organizations having their domain controllers infected with malware that have been infected for some time, call in Microsoft Consulting Services, and the answer is, please see if you can clean it off, because if we've got to repave our domain, that's a huge, huge cost for us. And if you've got a high degree of confidence that you understand what the malware is doing, go ahead and take care of it. And so that's kind of the it depends philosophy. Regardless of what you decide, understanding what the malware is doing is important for knowing the impact that it might be having on you or your company. This is the recipe that I came up with for cleaning malware off a system. I came up with this recipe about 10 years ago, and this recipe still applies today. It maybe is tweaked a little bit, but the basic steps when you suspect that a machine is being infected, of course, you're going to suspect it's infected because it's exhibiting some anomalous behavior. It's network connections out to nowhere. It could be something as subtle as that, or it could be something as blatant as it's locked up your screen with a fake dialogue telling you that you're in trouble and you not need to know if you can get your system back under control. First step, disconnect from the network. Now, disconnect from the network, that's a step that I came up with 10 years ago, because back then, malware was very aggressive about downloading additional malware off the web. A lot of times you'd have these stub pieces of malware that would just go off and pull down additional malware that people were paying access for, access to systems for. And so what I'd find is, as I was cleaning the system, more malware would start coming down while I was cleaning it, and I'd have a hard time just getting the system into a point where it would be clean in a stable state. And so I'd disconnect from the network, that would stop more stuff from coming down, and then I'd get control of it. The other reason to maybe disconnect from the network, especially in a corporate network, if the malware is exfiltrating data, you can stop the exfiltration of data while you've disconnected and figure out what's going on. It does have some downsides that I'll talk about as we go forward. The next step is to do reconnaissance. Try to identify the malicious processes or malicious DLLs or malicious drivers. And this is a point where you're just looking for things that are suspicious, anomalous, kind of getting a lay of the land of the system. Once you've done that, you've got a idea of which pieces of the running system are malicious, it's that point where you start the cleaning process if you want to go clean it. That point, once you've identified the processes, is to terminate them, get them out of the way so that they don't interfere with the cleaning process, and then identify the places that it's auto-started. So how does this malware reactivate after the system boots, or after you log in, or after you open a link, and take care of that. So at that point, you hopefully have disabled the malware, so even if the cleaning isn't complete, it's not going to reactivate the next time it should. And then finally, extra measure of precaution, delete the malware files off the system. And the reason that you delete, go to this extra level of precaution, of course, not just to keep your system clean of malware, but really so that even if you didn't discover all of the pieces of it in the first phases, you could be breaking the malware just by deleting some of its files. So if it happened to still be active, even after you deleted the autostart you thought it was using, but it had another one, you delete the files, and maybe that is the final step for deleting it, for disabling it. Just to be sure that you've identified it and cleaned it, reboot the system, look for anomalous behaviors that made you suspicious in the first place, and then repeat the process just to be sure. Look for more suspicious processes or files that could not be surfaced just because you've cleaned an initial layer of the malware off the system. So sometimes it might take a couple steps through this process to keep the system clean from malware. Let's go into that first phase. How do I identify and clean, identify the malware processes on the system? There's a few telltale signs that almost all malware still today reveal themselves with. These characteristics, if they have no icon in their image files, because most legitimate software will have an icon that identifies the piece of software that it's a part of. If they have no description or company name in the version information, again, part of the version resource information that a developer would put in the file, a lot of anti-malware developers just don't like advertising that stuff and just leave it out. If the image says that it's a Microsoft image, but it's not digitally signed by Microsoft, that's a telltale sign that it's probably malicious. If it's in the Windows directory or the System 32 directory, most legitimate software installs itself outside of those places in the program files directory or in the user profile directory now. If they're packed, and I'll describe what packed is in a minute. And then if you look inside the image, if they've got suspicious URLs in the image, that's something that could, you know, a URL that's pointing off at an IP address is an example. Or a DNS name that looks like it's made up gobbledygook because that's some anti-malware, some malware guy has adopted a DNS name and is serving that out. If they've got open TCP IP endpoints to remote places, like places in China, places in Russia, that's a good sign that it's a piece of malware. And then finally, if it's the process is legitimate, but it's hosting malicious DLLs or suspicious DLLs, that's something you also need to take a look at, especially for the kinds of processes that are designed to host DLLs that have no purpose themselves other than to be the carriers for DLLs. And I'll talk about that in a minute. How many people use Task Manager to look at the processes on their system? Come on, admit it. I can't believe you admitted it. I tricked you into admitting it, that you use because if you've been to sysinternals, you should be using which tool? Process Explorer, right. And I'll demonstrate why you should be using Process Explorer as I go through this. Let's pull it up. It's got, well, first I'll say that Process Explorer has got a ton of general purpose troubleshooting capabilities. You can use it to find handle leaks. You can find it to find DLL versioning problems. You can use it to find CPU related issues. But what I'm going to focus on in this presentation is just the anti-malware capabilities that are in it. Some of them just by virtue of the fact that it shows you so much information, and some of them are there because I specifically added them to help track down malware. Let's pull it up and take a look at what we see. Just a quick tutorial, so I'm assuming most of you are familiar with what Process Explorer looks like. You see this process tree. Unlike Task Manager's flat list of processes, this shows you the parent-child relationship between the processes. So a child that is beneath another one and slightly indented is a child of the process that it's beneath. For example, services.exe here is slightly beneath Wininit, and so this is going to be a child of Wininit. Processes that are left justified, those are sad, sad orphaned processes. Their parents have terminated, they're no longer around, and so Process Explorer can't show them in the process tree with their parent process. The next thing you'll notice is that there's a few columns here, CPU, commit, which is virtual memory, and physical memory usage of the process. You see the process ID, the description, and company name. Remember I mentioned suspicious processes often omit the description or company name. If you look through my list of running processes, all of them have descriptions and company names, except for these pseudo system processes up here, the system idle process and the system process. Those, we expect not to have them because those are part of the system processes that wouldn't have any. They're built into the system. The next thing you'll notice is color highlighting. Well, actually, before we get to color highlighting, let me show you one of the things that you can use. If you've got a piece of malware that is showing a dialog box, you can identify which process owns that dialog box, which can take you to the malware in the process tree using this window finder button. It's a bullseye. You just drag it over the window you're interested in, drop it, and then Process Explorer will highlight the process that owns that window. In this case, it's PowerPoint, of course. The other thing you can do is, if you've found a process with a bullseye here, and you want to look at more information, you can do a search online. And this is a feature you'll notice is in the new task manager in Windows 10. It's hard to say Windows 9. Windows 10. And that is, we'll open your favorite search engine, which is Bing. And then show you information about that process. Unfortunately, this doesn't work so well anymore for most malware because a lot of malware these days generates pseudo artificial names based off of legitimate files that happen to be on the system or just completely random names. And so when you do a search, because your version is completely unique name from anybody else's, you're not going to find anything about it. There's some color highlighting, but before I get into the colors that you see here, I want to point out color highlighting related to process activity. When you launch a process, you'll see that the new process, in this case two processes, because conhost and command.exe are related to each other, show up in green. They show up in green for, by default, 1 second. I've set the refresh display interval longer so that they show up longer like that. And that will show you processes that are coming. And if you delete or terminate the process, they'll show up in red, and that will show you processes that are leaving. Something, again, you can't really easily see in Task Manager. And a lot of malware will sit there in the background, spawning processes, terminating them, spawning them, so that they're not there all the time, but they're there periodically doing some crap in the background. When you see this red and green, that will clue you in to that malware is doing something. And I'm going to show you, there's a limitation with that, by the way. Process Explorer by default refreshes every 1 second. So if a process is so short-lived that it isn't caught by that refresh interval, I'll try one here. So we didn't see any ipconfig show up, and that's because it ran so briefly that it was between the two refreshes. Process Explorer didn't see it, no green, no red. But I'll show you in a little bit how you can find and see short-lived process activity. Now let's get to the process type highlights. There's a number of different highlights here. Let's start with the blue processes. Anybody know what the blue processes are? If you've seen one of my sessions before, you know that they are the boy processes. No, I'm just kidding. They're not the boy processes. These are the processes that are running in the same security context as Process Explorer. So everything in blue generally launched as part of my login session. So Explorer and all of the processes beneath it, you can see Explorer up here. And then you can see some random processes up here, even, that were launched on my behalf by system processes, like this system center notification process. There's pink processes a little bit further up in the tree. Those are ones hosting Windows services. Windows services are those background processes, like Unix daemon processes. Any process here in pink either hosts one or more Windows services, and there's a number of container processes here I mentioned, service host being one, that will host multiple Windows service processes. I'll show you how to look inside that in a second. Finally, there's purple processes. I don't have any purple processes listed here in my display, but if you see purple, that's a suspicious sign. Remember I said packed is suspicious? A lot of malware encrypts itself and compresses itself to obfuscate it from anti-malware engines and scanning engines. A lot of times they do multiple layers of compression and encryption so that anti-malware engines are forced to try to unwrap it to see if it's a piece of malware, and that unwrapping process can be very time-consuming. The hope of the anti-malware guys is to make it so onerous to unpack the thing that the anti-malware engines just give up early and don't actually take a look, or that it's interferes with the user's behavior anyway as the anti-malware engine's operating. It also gets in the way of reverse engineering for the anti-malware researchers. There's a number of other processes in different colors. Like you see the cyan color, that means it's a modern Metro Windows Store app process, capable process, or whatever we're calling it these days. I'm still not sure. But there's some other processes like that that are in different colors. And there's a color decoder up in the options menu where you can change the colors if you don't like the ones that are shown there. I mentioned that the service host process and looking inside the service host process to see what services are running in it. For any process, you can hover the mouse over the process and see a tooltip that will show you the command line and the path to the executable. But more interestingly, for processes that are hosting processes, like the service host, a tooltip will show you the services that are hosted within it. So this service host is hosting a number of services. More and more malware these days is taking advantage of these hosting processes. RunDLL32 is another example. But service host is also a process that malware now will sometimes hide in. If you want to get more detailed information about a process, you double-click on it. I want to point out that there is let's take a look at the Explorer. Take a look at the image here. And you can see things like the version number up at the top, the time that the image was built. So you can see this was built on October 9th, this release of Windows 10. You can see the command line here, the current directory. I'll come back to the auto start location. Parent process, Explorer's parent is terminated. The user, what time the process started. This can be useful for identifying malware if it happened to coincide with you visiting some site that you realize maybe you shouldn't have clicked on that link and something might have happened. If the timestamp here matches about that time, then maybe it's related to that site you visited. There's a number of other buttons here that we'll come back to in a second. The rest of the tabs are performance-related tabs, except for the strings tab, which we'll also come back to, and the TCP/IP tab, which will show you the open TCP/IP endpoint. So useful, again, if you suspect that a process is malicious, looking at to see if it's got any open network connections to the outside world that you don't expect to see. So what's the next step? I've got a lot of processes on that tree list. Actually, there's a couple in there that are my pseudo malware processes that exhibit some of the signs of real malware and some of the behaviors of real malware, but I don't think you probably noticed them jump out as I was scrolling through. And the reason is that they're designed to blend in like a lot of pieces of legitimate malware. I guess it's kind of weird to say legitimate malware. I guess illegitimate malware is the term I should use. But how can I find these pieces of malware that might be hiding on the system? What I'm going to do is have Process Explorer check the digital signatures of all the processes on the system by going into Options, and I'm going to say Verify Image Signatures, and I added the Verified Signers column, and that will cause Process Explorer to check the digital signature on every single file that it sees running in this view. And then what I'll do is sort, and you can see I've got lots of files that are signed with legitimate signatures. Now down here at the bottom, let me drag this over, I've got some that are not. Let's take a closer look at the ones that are not. I've got TSC Help from TechSmith, which is a Snagit utility that I use for screen captures. They've signed most of their software, but this one they've missed, and I've actually checked to make sure that this is actually a legitimate piece of software. I've got ZoomIt. This is the tool that I'm using to zoom in and out. This is a debug version or intermediate build version. I haven't digitally signed it. It's my own test version, so I expect that. And then I've got these two guys here, WinHost. If I take a look at the description and company name, they say that they're from Microsoft. They've got legitimate sounding descriptions, Windows Host Support Service, and they've got kind of icons. Anybody recognize that icon? Anybody here, old Windows old timer? Yeah, it's a Windows NT 3.1 WinLogon icon, which was used on WinLogon process up until Windows 7, and then they switched to no icon. But this is an oldie but goodie. So this is to fool people like me to thinking this thing is legitimate that remember that icon. But you can see that this thing says it's got no legitimate digital signature on it. And that is a surefire sign that this thing is probably malicious because almost all Microsoft, 99.9% of Microsoft software these days is digitally signed. Occasionally some binary will slip out somehow through the process and be unsigned. But almost always, a situation like this, this thing is almost definitely malicious. New thing though, how many people knew that you could do virus scanning basically from Process Explorer? Let's see a raise of hands. So only a few of you knew about this. This is a feature I added earlier this year. Integration with VirusTotal, specifically to help situations like this. If you come up to Options and you say VirusTotal, check VirusTotal.com, it's going to submit a digital hash of each of the process files to a site called VirusTotal.com, which you can go to and upload files to on-demand. I call this, by the way, this is kind of taking advantage of the cloud. This is antivirus as a service, or AS, as I like to call it. And you can see that it's reporting some numbers here. These numbers in that column are the number of positive detections over the number of antivirus engines that have scanned this file. So you can see that VirusTotal has over 50 engines typically scanning these executables. And if any of them showed up with red, that's a potential, that's some antivirus engine has flagged this thing as potentially malicious. This one is signed by the Hardware Compatibility Lab. It's from Realtek, but an antivirus engine is saying that it's potentially malicious. And that button there acts as a hyperlink. We should have just opened a browser. Yep, we did. And this takes us right to the report, and we can see that there's an antivirus engine, BCAV. Anybody heard of BCAV? I'm sure it's awesome. And so I'll trust this, and let's delete that process. No, I'm not going to do that. That is an example of problem with antivirus industry, is that a lot of times, because they're using heuristics, they'll fall FP, false positive, a legitimate binary. And that's why VirusTotal has so many engines that they scan these things with and report the totals from, and why tools like this don't just say, hey, this thing's malicious, just because one antivirus engine, or even a few, have identified it as potentially suspect. But this is a quick way to see if there's a known piece of malware on your system is to take advantage of this VirusTotal integration. Another tool that you can use, and what I recommend if you've got a system that you suspect is infected, besides that initial process explorer scan, is to use SigCheck. How many people have used SigCheck? A few of you. SigCheck is a tool that will let you look at digital signatures on files. So SigCheck, like Notepad, will show me that it's digitally signed and the version number and other information about it. I can even look at the signing chain for it. Like you could, even if it's a catalog sign file or an image sign file, you can see the certificate chain up to the root of trust and the timestamp for it. But I also, earlier this year, added VirusTotal integration to this. So what you should do is go to basically the root directory and enter a command like this, vr-s-e*. And let me explain what this is. This says use VirusTotal, submit the binary, actually, vrs. The S says if the hash that you've uploaded to VirusTotal, if VirusTotal hasn't seen this binary before, it'll say the file's unknown. The S tells SigCheck to upload the binary image for scanning, on-demand scanning, which will take a few minutes, but then it'll wait for the answer to come back to see what the antivirus engines have said about this unknown file. And then the R says, if there's a non-zero detection, open the browser and take me to the report. The S says, recurse through directories. The E says, only look at executable images, because the ones, even ones that have fake extensions on them, like if there's an executable with .jpg, SigCheck still sees this as an executable and will submit it. And then star, of course, check everything. And if I do that on this directory, let me just do a shortcut here. We're going to find that there's a number of files here that come back with non-zero, again, false positives from antivirus engines. And this one, look, even mainstream antivirus engines, false positive on regedit by McAfee. So that's awesome. So you can see, anyway, why we're here today. That's SigCheck. Let's move on. Let's talk about strings. Strings are a way to look inside the executable to see if there's anything suspicious. I mentioned earlier that there's tabs in Process Explorer that I haven't shown you, one of them being the strings tab. This WinHost, which looks suspicious, we can dig in and get some more information about it by going to the strings tab and then looking for suspicious URLs. All right. What happened to my suspicious URL? It's gone. I just rebuilt this over the weekend, and looks like I broke my malware. Oh, you know what? The compiler got too smart and optimized my string out. That's what happened. But you can see the kinds of strings you can see in this. We're going to take a look at real malware later, and you'll see this, where it'll show us some interesting strings inside of real malware. But that's the ability to look at strings. Now, finally, before we move on, there's the DLL view, which will look inside of a process at the loaded files within it. And for a service host, a particularly interesting one, because it's hosting Windows services, so you'll be DLLs in there from those Windows services. You open up the lower pane. If you've added the virus total column and told it to use virustotal.com, it'll do the same thing here, submitting the hashes, uploading the files, which is an option also to upload unknown files. And you can see, are there an unknown file? If there's an unknown file, you can say submit to virustotal. And even if it's not an executable, it'll submit it to virustotal and perform a scan of it. I'll open the browser. And you can see that it's now submitted this file, and it's going to scan it and tell us what the results are. So even files that are unknown here in the Process Explorer view. We've identified a potentially suspicious process. It's my fake little WinHost. None of the antivirus engines flagged it because I just rebuilt it this weekend, so it's a fresh executable. They have no reason to suspect it. But we have identified it as malicious. So the next step is to get it out of the way. What I told you earlier was to terminate it. So let's go terminate WinHost. And I saw some red and I saw some green. And look what the green is. It's WinHost again. Let's do this one. More green, more red. What's going on here is very common in a malware technique of self-preservation. It's the buddy system. It's like the two guys go off to war. Let's go fight the good guys because we're the bad guys. And if you die, I'll take over the paddles and resurrect you and bring you back. And if that happens to me, you come and do the same thing to me. And so how do we terminate these? Well, one way we can do this is just to see if we can race it. And so it usually takes me about 10 minutes and then I get it. So just kidding. We're not going to do that. What I recommend you do for situations like when you run into this is to suspend the processes. Put them to sleep. You can use suspend here on the menu. Suspend. They'll show up in dark gray. Suspend. And now they've fallen asleep. I put them in a trance. They don't know what's happening to them. It's actually more humane this way anyway. And then I get them out of the way. Let me bring them back, actually, because I want to show you something else with them. So now we've gotten our processes out of the way. The next step is to find the auto starts. How many people use msconfig? Anybody? It's really sad. It's really sad, especially because, and I can't believe you raised your hand after I made fun of the people with Task Manager, but if you go to the startup tab, you can see a lot of really awesome information about the startups. So it's improved a lot in later recent versions of Windows. It's a commitment here. It's not actually being fair. There is some startup tab. This stuff has moved into Task Manager, but it's still only a subset of the information that you can see with a tool called AutoRuns. How many people have run AutoRuns? So quite a few of you. Let's pull up AutoRuns. And I've already got it having scanned my system and identified literally hundreds of executables that are configured to start up or load based on whether I open the browser, log in, there's drivers, startup tasks, there's WinLogon extensions, there's Kodaks, printer, monitor drivers, literally dozens and dozens of locations where this stuff can hide. And one of the, as far as I know, AutoRuns is the most comprehensive source of AutoStart locations. And it's grown continuously. I just added another AutoStart location last week because I found malware taking advantage of some AutoStart location I didn't even know about. So it's constantly, the malware guys are really good at finding the nooks and crannies to be able to hide themselves to auto-start. So almost all of these in the last 5 years have been added just because malware has taken advantage of them. But you can see that for each location, like this VM applet in WinLogon, there's a file here listed, the path to the executable or the auto-start location name, company name, description, timestamp. That's a relatively new feature. We'll show you the time that that binary was made. And if you click on that, it'll show you some more information down here, the size and the timestamp and other information. This is an overwhelming amount of information. So what I recommend you do is go to Options, go to Scan Options, and by default, these buttons will be checked. Hide Microsoft and hide Windows entries. But to make sure that you don't let something through like a WinHost that says it's from Microsoft but it's not really, you want to check this too, verified code signatures. And that will only show images that are either unsigned or signed by somebody other than Microsoft. And now this becomes a much more manageable list to look at. And you can see that over in the logon tab, oh, we're probably hitting a network path on one of my login scripts that's trying to reach out to Microsoft's network. Okay, that'll come back in a second, hopefully. Because WinHost will show up in there as well. Yep, policies. Okay, so let's just take care of that. There's going to be a couple more of those. I'll come back in a second. Let me show you some of the other features. For each one of these locations, you can right-click, you can delete the file, you can copy that entry from the list view, you can jump to the entry. So this will take you to the auto-start location. So there's where Snagit is registered, that shell extension. So whenever I use Explorer, Snagit, this DLL loads up just because it's registered right here. I can disable it by clicking this checkbox, just like in msconfig. I can jump to the image in Explorer. There it is. And take a look, the deeper look there. Or I can search online or just look at the properties directly like this. But the cool thing that, there's some other cool features I don't have time to really dig into. Like AutoRuns is able to look at offline systems. So if you have a system that's severely infested, you can still boot off a Windows to go key or boot into Windows PE and then point AutoRuns at the Windows directory and the user profile you want to scan, and it'll do a scan just like we saw there of the offline system with all the same capabilities. This is the first time ever anybody's seeing this. I've been working on integrating AutoRuns now with VirusTotal. So this isn't quite ready. I'll probably release it next week. But if you can see this new VirusTotal column over here, and if I go to Options, Scan Options, and say check VirusTotal, again, we can submit unknown images. And if I do a rescan, we get the exact same kind of behavior. There's our false positive, another false positive. Let's see who we can make fun of this time. Jingmin antivirus. That's another. Join the list. Join the club of the FP club here. And you can see now that AutoRuns with VirusTotal integration now makes looking for malware, at least known pieces of malware, a lot easier. One's against 50, again, over 50 antivirus engines behind you in that scan. Like I said, once you're done, you've got your auto start locations, and we do have WinHost in here somewhere. There's WinHost right here. It's in a place that MSConfig is not aware of, by the way. Policies Explorer Run. You can see it's not verified. Antivirus engines don't know about it. But what I've just done is delete it. Or did I? Watch this. If I jump to entry, I thought I just deleted it. Let's just try to delete it right here. Refresh. It's back. Again, common malware behavior. Because I didn't terminate WinHost, it's sitting there actively watching its register key and fixing it. So we'll show you in the next section what you do when you run into a situation like that. What is putting it back? And that, for that, we're going to turn to a tool called Process Monitor. Now, Process Monitor is a real-time system monitoring tool. How many people have used it? Oh, quite a few of you. File system, registry, network, process, thread, lots of different activity. It's the number one most powerful troubleshooting tool on sysinternals. It's 80% of the cases that I solve or that other people solve and send me solved with process monitor. And awesome at helping you track down cases where malware is infected a system to understand what it's doing. Let's pull it up and I'll give just a quick run through some of the features and the display. So first thing we see is sequence number, time of day, this is sequence in the list view, the process name, the process ID, the operation, so reg close key, the path, the result, and then detail specific to the operation. So if it's, for example, reg open key, we can, here, let's get a more interesting one, create file. We can see for the create file, what type of open it was, whether it's creating a file or opening it, its options on the open, share mode on the open, and whether it opened or created, if it was a create call. I'm going to get rid of some of these columns that we're not really interested in for this talk, just to get some more screen real estate. And now, let's take a deeper look at some of the things you can do with process monitor. You can take a look at the process details here and the process properties, a lot very similar, of course, on purpose to what you see in Process Explorer's process properties. You see the command line, you see the path, you see information about who ran this and what time the process started, what login session it was part of, that authorization ID, and some other information, including the list of DLLs loaded into it at the time of that particular event. The key to effective process monitor usage is filtering. So one of the things I want to do is understand who's putting back that registry key. So what I can do, there's a few different ways, by the way, you can filter. One is if you're interested in just a particular operation or a field in the list view, you can right-click on it and then use this quick filter to include it, exclude it, highlight it, or copy it to the clipboard. Or you can start a filter edit. Here's the filter dialog box where, for example, if I just wanted to say everything that all network connections to this, so I could say path contains, and that's a quick way to get the edit dialog pre-populated with something that I just want to go and edit to make a new filter. So if I just wanted to see everything from Explorer, include Explorer, and now just Explorer showing. The nice thing about this is a non-destructive filter, so I can press Control R and everything comes back, the stuff that I filtered out. So it's just a visual filter. Like I said, we're interested in who is tracking down that particular key. And so let me just show you real quick how we can do that. So I can say path contains, and we want to say winhost, because we saw it putting back winhost.exe. Of course, we don't expect to see anything here. Now I go back here, say delete. Oh, and why didn't I see anything? Oh, why am I not seeing anything? Oh, it's because it's Windows host in the path. And now we should see exactly who put it back. So you can see regedit here, deleting it. We can see right here's the delete, regdelete value. And you can see there's our old friend winhost putting it back. In fact, two copies of winhost, you can see two different process IDs. Both of those buddies rushed to fix that auto start location. So there's Process Explorer or Process Monitor showing you what malware is doing behind the scenes. All right, so that was our quick whirlwind tour of the tools and how to use those tools. What we're going to turn to now are some real malware cases and walk through those. Oh, actually, almost forgot this, which is really important. This is the latest sysinternals tool. It's called Sysmon. How many people have saw the release of Sysmon? It was released it about a month and a half ago, so it's fresh, brand new. Let me explain what Sysmon is. It's not a reactive malware hunting tool. It's a proactive malware hunting tool. It's one that I actually recommend that you go back to your corporate networks and your home systems and install on all of them. It installs in the background as a service and a driver, and it logs entries to the event log about all process activity, as well as outbound network connections and timestamp changes. This is a tool that I developed with a friend internally at Microsoft to help us in Microsoft understand malware infections on the Microsoft corporate network after the fact. After we've identified suspicious activity, because we've had Sysmon now on all Microsoft's critical corporate servers, we can go back and understand what the bad guys were doing. It's got the internal version has more sophisticated capabilities than this public version. So I already just mentioned the capabilities of the public version. The internal version lets us capture the attacker's files. A lot of times attackers drop files onto the system and then shred them and delete them, and we're able to, with Sysmon, capture those files so we can look at the tools that the attackers are dropping. But we felt, and the reason that we're withholding that is because, of course, we want to keep it out of the hands of the attacker so that they can't defeat it. But we thought this is useful enough to share with the outside world. Now, once you get an infection, you can go back to the event log and trace what happened. And I've got a real case with Sysmon that I'm going to show you in a few minutes. It's as easy to install as any other sysinternals tool. You just run Sysmon and you specify that you want to install it with a switch, and it's installed and then running from then on unless you want to disable it. So I'll skip that, and I'll skip showing you the Sysmon event log because I'll show you a real case in a few minutes. But the first malware case that I want to share with you is a piece of scareware. Now, how many people have run into scareware? This is the kind of the fake anti-malware that's like, your system is totally hosed, give up, and pay me lots of money. How many people have seen that? Quite a few of you. Well, I'm actually flattered to say that there's fake anti-malware that advertises itself as being from sysinternals. The sysinternals anti-malware, has anybody by any chance used this thinking it's real? Okay, just wanted to check. The really annoying thing about this piece of anti-malware, fake anti-malware, is that they don't even link to sysinternals.com. So I've sent the guy an email saying, please, add it. What's really also flattering is that here's a piece of malware that says it's from me. And then there's a root package that advertises it's got to be good if it's a sysinternals rootkit. But the first tool we're going to take a look at is something called FakePav. And for that, I'm going to switch over to another machine that's running my virtual machines. And I've got FakePav ready to go. And I launch it. And here in a second, this thing has the gall to ask for admin rights, which, what would your mother do? Or your dad? Yes. And here we go. This is going to go through a few phases. The first thing it's going to do, you're going to see, oh, UAC is disabled, and then it reboots so that now it's got full admin rights and UAC is disabled, so nothing can interfere with its, you know, WOW64 redirection is disabled, so now this thing is able to operate basically without any constraints on it. I'm going to go to it analyzing. In the middle of analyzing, to show you after it reboots, just to save a little bit of time, that after it reboots, it starts an antivirus scan. And it's going to find lots of really scary stuff on this system. Like it found an SMTP client, which is, you can see that it does have a bug. So I've told them about that. They still haven't fixed it. And then let's go to another snapshot, which is this thing being done. And I'll show you how we get past it using sysinternals tools. So this is, refresh the screen. So this is what we're left with. Lots of scary infection stuff. Trojan downloader. It's found a worm that's critical. It's found a hoax, which if you find a hoax on your system, you're in real trouble. And if you try to disable this thing, it says it's not error. You can allow unprotected startup in settings. well, that's convenient. So, oh, settings. And then we go through, look, you can have it do automatic scans of your system if you want to, periodically. You can enable the Windows Activity Booster. That sounds like something you'd offer you get over the internet to get an activity booster. Then you can say allow unprotected startup, which also sounds like something that you don't want to do with your activity booster. And then you can say disable. It's unsafe for my private data. I say OK anyway. And now I'm at a desktop. But so let's see what sysinternals tools show us. So let me open, go to my sysinternals tool. And let's run, well, first let's run Zoomit. Uh-oh. What's wrong with Zoomit? It's suspected to have infected the PC. I didn't know that I'd put a backdoor inside the Zoomit. Actually, and if we try to run these other tools, Process Explorer, this one intercepts data transmitted to a remote server. If I try to run auto runs, this one, same thing. I'm basically dead in the water, right? Well, this is my favorite time. When malware tries to stop me from running the sysinternals tools, that's when I have fun. So at this point, it's like, how do I run this? What if I rename this to MS Paint? Maybe it's just you looking for sysinternal tools names. Nope. It still sees that it's a sysinternal screen magnifier. What if it lets me run it from the Windows directory? What if it's got a whitelist that will let me run it from there? Let me copy that over. Control C. Control V. Did it copy? Can't tell if it copied or not. Where'd it go? MS Paint. Copy. Paste. There we go. And voila. We've got Zoomit. Awesome. So we tricked it. So let's go back and do that with the rest of them. Let's do Process Explorer first. So we're going to name this one, let's call it MS Paint 1. And copy that over as well. Looks like Control V and Control C aren't working on this laptop. So let's copy, paste, and there we go. And we're actually going to have it submit to VirusTotal. Let's set the font a little bit bigger while we're here. And look at that. 21 of 45. Oh. This is an older version of Process Explorer, so it's... Let's see if it works again. It really is. That is a bug that's fixed. Okay, please don't crash. So the malware you can see here, didn't mean to do that. I'm in double zoom mode. You can see the malware here, guard FERP. It's purple, which means it's packed. It's got no company name or description. It's being flagged as being malicious by 21 of 45 antivirus engines. Okay, this is the fake anti-malware popping up for us. You can see that it has taken over. It's the parent process of Explorer. If I take a look at the strings, let's take a look at the strings. Because it's packed, we're not going to find anything. I'm going to search for HTTP. We're not going to find anything in this. Well, there we did. Well, actually, this is a digital signature. It's been signed by Komodo Digital Signature. So this is a piece of malware that's signed, digitally signed with a valid certificate. If we let's take a look at, see if that certificate is still valid, by the way. We can say verify right here and just take a look at that one. image, and sure it is. And in fact, we can. The guy's so proud of his malware that he's telling us his name. But if we take a look at the strings, because it's packed, we're not going to find the interesting ones in the image. We have to say what the strings in memory where they're unpacked. And now you can see probably the command and control server's IP address right there of this thing. So an example of looking inside the image and finding something more. What we want to do, of course, is clean this thing off our machine. So let's take a look at auto runs. Well, and let me show you something even better. Is this right here. Process Explorer has built in the auto start location. And if I say explore, it'll take me to exactly where this thing has registered itself to auto start, which is as the Windows shell, which is why it's the parent of Explorer instead of being Explorer, it's this thing. Let me pull up auto runs. Control C, copy, and Control P, paste. Ah, this is annoying. Paste. And let's call this MS Paint 2. And when I run this, now what's going to show up is that process, and we're going to be able to clean it right off the system just by, and this is a technique to be aware of, is if something's taken over the shell, the key is not to just simply delete it, because then you'll get no shell, but to put it back to explorer.exe. So that scan's going to take a second because it's network is actually acting a little bit sluggish. So we'll come back to that in a minute. Just to save time, let's continue on to the next case. This one is a little bit embarrassing. My mom sends me email. Mark, I'm getting weird. Whenever I open the browser, even though I set Bing to my homepage like you told me to, I get this thing right here. And it's really annoying. I'm also getting this pop-up all the time telling me that I need to back up my computer, and I know that you set up backups for me, so what's going on? Did you break something? So this is a high priority incident, of course. So I go after the backup toast first. This is an example of the Windows Finder. I just used the Windows Finder. Look at what it took me to, this mad backup pc.exe process. Next thing I did was launch auto runs, and there I see it right there. It's it's digitally signed, so another example of potentially unwanted software getting the digital signature. So that's why auto runs by default doesn't just hide anything that's digitally signed, just the Microsoft stuff. So you can see stuff like this in it. And so all I did at that point was to disable that, kill the process and uncheck that, and that toast problem was gone. Now the next thing I had, of course, was this startup into the browser, into that page that she didn't want. First thing I did, well, take a look at the home page she'd set, and of course it was Bing, she wasn't lying to me. So what I did was capture a startup of IE with process monitor to see what was going on. Let's go take a look at that. And got the log file right here. What I'm going to do is open the process tree. This is a process tree view, just a lot like Process Explorer. I'm going to Internet Explorer. You can see there's two Internet Explorer processes, parent and child of each other. If I select the parent and say include subtree, that sets a filter just for those. And if I look at the startup, which I could have seen in the process tree, but I'll show you that here. For when a process start event, you can see the command line. And you can see there that Internet Explorer is pointing at that URL when it starts up, even though the home page was set to something different. At this point, I was stumped for a few minutes. How is Internet Explorer set to open this URL as the command line argument? Anybody have any ideas? A what? A batch file? No. This is just clicking on IE in the start menu. I think somebody might have said it. The shortcut was modified to add this URL as the command line option for IE's shortcut. So that's why every time she launched IE, it was opening to that. So that's seeing that and not finding any evidence of that URL anywhere in the registry, that's what led me to the shortcut. I cleaned the shortcut, and then that problem was gone. Or so I thought. A month later, my mom calls me, "Mark, I'm infected with malware again." "Okay, Mom, what are you doing?" "Nothing, I promise. I'm just Facebooking with my friends." And, of course, opening PowerPoint, you know, animated PowerPoints all day long and videos that her friends are sending around with each other. And even though I tell her not to do that. So, but, you know, it's my job to go clean her machine. So I go clean her machine. And at this point, I'm like, I know I cleaned it before. I clean her machine again. I know. I'll put Sysmon on it just in case she gets infected again. I can figure out what's going on. So I put Sysmon on her machine, and sure enough, a month later, "Mark, I'm infected. My friends are over here, and now they're wondering if you're really as good at troubleshooting Windows as you say." That really hurt. You can see here's the, and she knows because Defender's telling her that she's been infected. I'm like, what's going on here? So I open the Sysmon log. I've got Sysmon's log here loaded. And I search for the timestamp that MS Defender did the cleaning in the event log file to see what was cleaning. And you can see there's an event right here that I came across. Here's the Defender engine. And it's setting the timestamp. So remember that I told you that one of the event types that Sysmon captures is timestamp changes. You can see that it's captured the timestamp change on dirvinst1. And what this is doing is when it's quarantining this file, the timestamp's going to get modified, so it whacks it back to the original. Now, the next thing I did was this dirvinst1. I wonder where that came from. So I scanned down a little more, and what I did on the live system, on my system, which is pretty beefy at home, was did a search for dirvinst1.exe. That would take too long on this laptop, so I'll see if I can take us to the event, which is, it's at, and I wish event log had bookmarks, 9:21 p.m., 9:13, or it would search faster. Or I knew PowerShell well enough to do it. All right, come on. And of course, there's so many events. Oh, I'm close. 9:13, 9:21, 7:21, 7:26, 7:30. It's going to take a while. Oh. Where are you? No. Okay, here we go. 9:15. And then what I found, we're so close, 9:21. Sorry about this. Oh, it's really, what just happened? Jumped. Event viewer, thank you. No, 9:21. There we go. All right, there it is. So there's a launch of process create of dirvinst 2, the process that anti-malware had seen. And if you look at the command line, offers wizard with some GUID slash update. So this thing somehow is on her system that must be going periodically to the web and trying to pull down more malware. Somehow I'd missed like that core piece of the malware the last time I'd cleaned her machine. Where is this thing getting launched from? Going back one step to see, what's its parent process? Another thing that Sysmon puts in the event log, it shows you right there what the parent process is. SWV updater, updater.exe, it tells me exactly where it is as well. How did that thing get launched? One command up. Well, there's a network connection, but a few network connections up, and there's software updater getting launched, and it's getting launched by task eng, a scheduled task. So how did this thing get past me? Because I'm sure I'd run auto runs before. I open up, and I submitted the file because it was there, and you can see tons of anti-malware engines flag this thing. I open up auto runs, and the reason I'd missed it is that I couldn't tell this thing was fake when I'd done my previous cleaning. It's got kind of a legitimate looking icon. It's digitally signed. It's got a company name and a software description. And so, I don't know what kind of stuff she's got on her machine. It's an OEM system. And so I try to be careful about what I clean off. But here I'd missed this. With the virus total integration in auto runs, I would have hit it right away. But I missed it. Sysmon took me exactly to this piece of software as being the malicious thing that was reinfecting her PC. Cleaned it off, and her system's been clean thus far. So a combination of tools there. Let's take a look at corporate infections. This one is a case that somebody sent to me. Company systems were exhibiting signs of malware infections. And the reason, the suspicious behavior is that their corporate users were getting flooded with emails that were malicious. And they were originating from inside the network. Some of the users were also getting pop-ups on their machine. And when they took a look at whose email accounts are sending these things and who's getting the pop-ups, they were all working on a common XLS file. Holiday, you can see the name holiday.xls. They called in Microsoft support, said something appears wrong, suspicious here on our network. We think we're infected. Common thread that we found is this Excel file that people are using. So Microsoft support, first job was to see if there was something wrong with this Excel file. The first thing they did was notice that there was a file called 4.xls in the XLS start folder. And they would delete it, but the file would come back. You run Excel, and the file would get dropped again there. With open that holiday.xls. So just to verify that holiday.xls was indeed an infected file, they captured a process monitor trace, which I've got right here. And then they looked at the process tree. And when they looked at the process tree, they see there's Excel. And they see a few processes under Excel, a command process. And you can see that it's hiding start 4k4.xls, that file that was sitting right there in that directory. And then it's dropping it. And then it's setting the attribute on it to make it a system file and a hidden file right there, the dash s and dash h. And then it's deleting the file a little bit later. So why is Excel launching a command prompt? If we say go to event, that takes us to the first event of that process. If we look at the parent event, this process create here of Excel, which is creating that process, and look at the stack. So we see the way that you read a stack is from the bottom to the top. Functions inside the process and the DLLs the process has loaded are calling each other up to the point where one of them initiates the operation that's captured by process monitor. In this case, Excel is calling functions within itself until it gets to, what's this? Visual Basic Design Time Environment. This is a Visual Basic macro virus sitting inside the Excel file that is dropping that k4.xls and that is then looking at the contact list, spanning, and doing pop-ups. So using process monitor, they were confirmed that this thing was a maliciously infected Excel file with the macrovirus in it, submitted to a Microsoft anti-malware team. Signatures were developed for it, and they were able to clean the thing off. And you can see now this thing then got classified as mailcab.a after that. So success on that. One final malware infestation I want to show you. This one is a pretty cool one. It shows you the kinds of sophisticated techniques that developers are getting to these days to get themselves on a system and persist themselves with the admin rights in really clever ways. This, and by the way, I just love this if you haven't seen this. So, really not that funny? So let's take a look at Seraphif. Let me go back to the other system where I've got Serif. Ready to go. So look at what this thing does. I just launched it. It's not a coincidence that I'm getting this pop-up to do what? Update Adobe Flash. Does anything look suspicious about this dialog? It's a trick question. The answer is no. This is actually the legitimate Adobe Flash pop-up to updater pop-up. You can see the blue stripe. It is digitally signed. If we say show, you can see that a verified publisher is Adobe. If I say no, look what happens. Yes, you will. All right, now watch what happens when I say yes. Great, I'm getting an update for Adobe. And what has happened is, I forgot to turn on Process Monitor. Let's go back, because it'll just take a second. The second that I say yes to that dialogue, it's game over. So just to prove that, this time I'll get Process Monitor going. And launch, yes. And what I'm going to do is terminate this thing instantly. So I didn't even do the update. That was the legitimate update. I'm infected at this point with a very clever piece of malware. Let's take a look at Process Explorer to see what it shows us. Well, actually not Process Explorer. Let's see auto run, sorry. If I press F5, where's my F5. Zoom in here. And look what shows up. A couple of interesting, not verified entries called Google Update. This is an interesting piece of malware for another reason. It only targets corporate users that have installed Google, the Google Business Edition of Chrome. And then it masquerades itself as part of the Google Update service. You can see that the system has that Google Chrome Business Edition on it with the legitimate Google Updater, but there's a couple of new auto starts now that are pointing at, obviously, a fake one. You can see it's a Russian name here, so they are actually revealing a little bit of themselves. The path is a strange path as well. And what's curious about this path is that we can't get to it. So I can say copy to clipboard, or I can say copy down here. And paste. Whoops, I didn't mean to. Copy, paste, because I forgot my Control-V is not working, and CD, and the directory name is invalid. Let's try to work our way down to that directory name. CD program files, Google, desktop, install. Let's see what I've got here. Nothing. It looks empty. There's actually a weird directory here that has nothing in it as the name. If I do autocomplete, you can see that it's just a bunch of spaces. Right there. That's the autocomplete. What this thing is doing is it's using right-to-left Unicode, which none of the built-in Windows tools know how to deal with in a path. Regedit doesn't know how to deal with it. Command Prompt doesn't know how to deal with it. Explorer doesn't know how to deal with it. If we try to go to this in Explorer, if we do this here, we end up in an infinite loop. actually an explorer, we end up in an infinite loop. And then it ends up getting to the exceeding the path length. And that, those spaces are actually hidden behind those spaces are big, long Unicode strings that just are not printable. So this thing is really hidden. You can still clean this thing off your system using auto runs. First thing that we try to do is if we do this, we can unselect that. And let's see if that worked. Let me press F5. And you can see that one of them is gone, but one of them is still there. If we do a jump to entry, you can see even regedit has problems showing the thing. And that run key looks empty even though something's there because regedit just doesn't know how to deal with it. So the only way to clean this off, because you can't get at that value, is to delete the run key. And at that point, I've disabled that service, I've deleted the thing, and now this thing is clean from this malware. So that's an example of some of the more sophisticated techniques, still within reach of the techniques and tools that I've shown you today with Process Explorer, Auto Runs, Sysmon, and Process Monitor. Let's go back and we'll wrap it up. So the trends that we're seeing, of course, this is just probably not news to anybody in this room, more sophisticated attacks, but still lots of bulk malware, like the kind that my mom got, this potentially unwanted stuff. Some of that fake malware, still pretty blatant. That list of techniques that I showed you, the characteristics of no icon, no description, company name, packed, strange strings in the URLs, all still apply to most of the malware that we've seen, almost all the malware that we've seen in the examples that I've shown you. And these are representative across the spectrum, from fake malware to corporate infestations like we've seen, to macro viruses, to the malware that my mom got in her home PC. The bottom line, and this question people ask me, Mark, how do I know that I don't have malware on my system? The answer is you don't know. The only way to know you've got malware on your system is to see some sign of it. There's no way I can take a look at a system and say, yeah, that thing is clean, 100% guarantee that's clean. If you tell me that there's a suspicious behavior, then that's something that you can latch onto and then drill into to find out where that suspicious behavior is originating. And then you might find the root of infestation or actually clear the machine as being infected. But it requires seeing something suspicious. And this is another, again, advantage of Sysmon. If you've got Sysmon logging with event forwarding, dumping it into a central place and then looking for basically getting baselines of the kinds of executables that are being run on your corporate network and then looking for places where you see new pieces of software show up and then potentially work its way across your network. Again, with the network connection tracing, you can see the kind of hopping across your network with Sysmon logs. That's the kind of level of sophistication that we need to get to understand infections that are coming into our systems. One last thing, I know it's lunchtime, but how many people knew that I've written three actually at this point, cyber thrillers? How many people have read Zero Day or any of them? Just a few, so a lot of new book buyers in here, that's great. So the point of these book series was to be legitimate, so I've stayed true to the science of it. I've had my own experience here. I've also had the security researchers and antivirus researchers at Microsoft review the books and said, be brutal. I want this thing to be legitimate across all three books. I had Bill Gates do the blurb for the first one. Kevin Mitnick, if you know him, did the forward for the second one. And the third one came out in just May, and I've got a little video that I want to leave you with that just is a little advertisement for the book before I leave you. And I'll note that I am officially past the end of the session time, so this is bonus material. You can think of it that way. And here we go.
Jeff Eakin, ex-CIA. As head of counter-cyber-terrorism, he predicted 9/11. He stopped cyber warfare from Al-Qaeda. But when he's asked to investigate vulnerabilities at the New York Stock Exchange, someone wants him stopped permanently. From the real-life cybersecurity expert Mark Rusinovich, the key to a world financial empire is the Rogue Code.
So you wouldn't be able to believe how long it took me to get my voice to sound like that, but it's pretty good. All right, with that, I want to thank you very much.